I don't pre-edit all that. I do all I you know the different clips are all played live off the soundboard, because if I pre-edited it, I would be way too tempted to have that horn just blaring in, like, triplets or something in the background. So this is Pure Decking, show number 476 for Thursday. The fuck is today? April the 21st, 1986. This is the show about stuff that interests me, like information security, rigging the game, and is anybody else really just getting fucking tired of the internet? But you guys, I'm getting kind of tired of it. But anyways, so tonight we have an Are You? What's up, Are You?
I'm just letting you know, if I drop, I'll be back in 2 minutes. As it'll be a reboot. Still having some machine I haven't fixed yet. So, never fear, I will be back
All right.
if I do drop.
So, just Alizard in the IRC there. When a grown man with two doctorates in computer science asks, how does DNS server work? I have given. We were talking about this the other day. And of course, I used to work at a school. And you said, of course, you remind us of that. But I'm beginning to think that a lot of the education people get today is more detrimental than anything. I think it's not that, sure they're learning stuff, but I think they're kind of filling their head with garbage and they're forgetting how to think, how to
Well,
figure things out.
we spent an hour yesterday and we solved the problem simple.
Yeah.
But the only problem is that a lot of people become unemployed when we solve that problem. I mean, just think of all the HR departments that would disappear.
Yeah. Yeah,
If
well, I
you're
mean that goes back
wondering
to that
what we're talking
conversation.
about, we were sort of pointing towards you do more of an apprenticeship for a job than an actual university course.
Oh yeah, 'cause I that's right, 'cause I started trying to lay out what I would do for an information security
And
apprenticeship, and
I think it was perfect.
so
Or as close as you can get to it.
so I mean that might be fun to kind of lay out on here, why not?
Yeah,
So
we can do.
Huh?
Yeah, we can do 20 minutes.
So, I was we were talking about this, and yeah, I have a degree. I have not used anything in that degree in a decade, and I mean, I had some good instructors when I took the degree. They taught you some good l business lessons, some of them good life lesson kind of things, but the actual technology side of the house. I mean, come on. So, and honestly, and where we got going with this was, I was talking with some people at a conference a while back, and because they were going on about how important it was to get people with proper education, and I said, yeah, but education never simulates properly an actual production environment in a business. It never does. You don't have all those users clicking on shit. You don't have engineers making changes in the background. You don't have 10-year-old systems that have been jerry-rigged together, talking to systems in ways that nobody expects. And because you've now moved a computer object in AD, everything broke. Like, everything fucking broke because they weren't using any kind of a configuration management. They just had Bob deploying his config script onto every Linux server they built that was making a few changes so that it fucking worked. And
Yeah, they're going to blame Bob for that. And
yeah, they
it's
well,
not his
it
fault.
turns out, and it turns out Bob got the script from Jeb. Jeb got the script from Dan. Dan left the
Dan
comp
doesn't work here
Dan
anymore.
left the company 2 years ago, and Jeb died of a heart attack. So it's like,
Exactly. No one knows who built this anymore. And for fuck's sake, there is no diagram on how it works.
So, I mean, but I kind of feel like a lot of education makes people dumber these days, just based on observation. I mean,
Yeah.
and because they're so used to there being a right answer. They're so used to being, okay, somebody's going to say this was the right answer, because when you're going through school, that's what happens. You go through, you think you've solved the problem, you go check with the professor he says, yeah, that's right, no, that's not, and there is a correct answer. And that was always something that fucked me up going through there, is because I would give a lot of answers that worked but weren't the correct answer,
correct one.
Especially in my Windows 2000 certification class. And it turned out that was because the guy who was teaching the class didn't actually know what he was on about. He was looking for somebody to recite the exact text of the book. And because I didn't memorize the text, I learned the software by, you know, fucking using it. You know, I wouldn't call it the exact right checkbox or say the exact right page it was on. I would just say, oh, you know, it's on the system properties. You go up and go in there and then you turn it on. And it's like, no, that's not the right answer. The right answer is you open, you know, users and computers. You right click the object. You go to properties. You go. It's like, and, you know, half of us are looking around going, isn't that what I just said? No, you left this step out. And the step was like clicking on the tab. And it's just like, the fuck? So, yeah, it was very frustrating. So you have a lot of people who have learned a correct answer must exist, as opposed to people who've actually been in the field and learned you do what works. So if I was going to bring up somebody fresh, straight out of high school, and with a bit of aptitude for computers into information security, first thing I'd do is I'd make them do a year on the help desk. And I know that, you know, you're going to run people out, right? Well, yeah. But, you know, make them do that year on the help desk. And while they're doing that year on the help desk, have them reading SysOp books at night so they can get, you know, an A-plus cert or something like that. Then have them do a year as a SysOp. And then, you know, have them take a day or a couple hours a week, whatever. Have them learning a bit of coding. Then you make them do a year as a code, you know, or not a year. I think I said, what did I say? 6 months shadowing a coder?
6 months, yeah.
Yeah, because they don't actually
in between.
Go ahead.
In between all this, though, we were discussing that you bring them into meetings and stuff, even though they don't need to be in there, just so they can learn the corporate environment and the language.
Right, yes. And that was because the whole idea was that before I even had them touch a security system, I wanted them to understand how the network worked. That's why they did that time as a SysOp, is so that they knew what the SysOps were doing with keeping things working. I wanted them shadowing a coder, not because I wanted them to learn code, which is why I put that time shorter, but because I wanted them to understand what those guys were doing. I wanted them to understand how software was being developed, deployed, and managed. I wanted them to have that time on the help desk is because I wanted them to understand what they were dealing with regards to the users and the range you get of users, because you will have a ton of users who call you up because they can't tell the keyboard from the power supply. You'll have another set of users calling you up saying, yeah, so I've just installed Python and R and I'm pulling data off of the server into my Excel spreadsheets and trying to generate my reports. And the system says it's out of RAM and you guys already put 32 gig in here. So what do I do? You know, you're going to get that too. So people are unironically learning Bubble Sort and Go or Python by heart. Yeah. Well, yeah. Yeah. And that's the thing is I don't expect, and it's not that I expect them to remember every detail of what they've covered, right? Because if it's a technical detail, you can Google it. And I don't care if you have to Google, you know, the exact syntax for a command or how to configure something. Nobody cares if you have to Google that. What I want you to know is that you have to know to Google that. I want you to know how that system works, because I can't tell you the number of security people fresh, you know, with a fresh degree that I've interviewed who, you know, you give them the question during the interview of, okay, you've just scanned a server, you know, it's a web server and it comes back with an odd port open. You know, it's got your web server ports you expect and then an odd port. How do you react to that? The number of them say, oh, I just block it or I shut it down and open a case. And it's like, depending on the scenario, that might be the right answer, but that is the wrong process. You do not just walk in, say, I'm security, and turn a box off. Because if you don't know what that port is, and in most of the examples, I usually use an IRC port, because back in the day, that was how botnets would, you know, back end. That's just me. But, you know, today that's not as true, and a lot of people don't recognize the port numbers. So if they asked me what the port number was, I would tell them in a lot of these interviews, right? That, I always thought that was the gag of it, was, you know, they're sitting there trying to think of what the port number is because I threw one of the odd IRC port numbers out. And it's like, and then finally says, well, I don't know what that port number is. Well, ask. It's like, well, what is it? And I say, it's IRC. It's like, you just tell me what it is? Yeah, I don't care if you knew what it was or not. You could have pulled out your phone and Googled it. I didn't care. What I wanted to know was what you did.
Yeah, your process.
Right. And so that's why I was thinking, you need to have, if I'm going to start you in security, you need to have an idea of how all these systems work. Because if you know how they work, even at a high level, and how they interact, you will be 10 times better doing security work than somebody who's just, you know, read the books, got their CISP, and they're brought in as an auditor, right? Because they're not going to understand that, hey, I need you to change that setting, or, hey, you got to turn off SMB version 1. One of the articles I saw when we were doing when I was hunting for stories, which admittedly was rough today, was apparently Windows 11 is turning off SMB 1 by default in some of the newer builds. Well, that's great.
Nice.
Because SMB version 1 has holes in it. But you know what else is a problem with that? SMB version 1 is still used by a lot of legacy servers. And it's like, I would love to turn off SMB version 1, except I've got that 10-year-old file server that the guy who built it left the company 6 years ago, and we know stuff is using it, but nobody's had the time to figure out what it is. And if I turn it off, I break a business process, and we lose $1 million an hour. You know, if you don't understand that, you're going to cost the company more problems than an actual security incident. So, okay. Alhazard in the IRC is saying, like, OpenBSD knows what's up. Rip it out. Bluetooth, throw it in the trash. It's like, okay. You know what? From a security perspective and from a good technology perspective, you're right. Unfortunately, no business operates like that. If you're working in a professional, if you're going to tell people, sorry, you can't use those Apple AirPods, they say, okay, you can't help us, leave. It just doesn't work. As much as I love to be the department of quit it, it doesn't work. You've got to do a little better than that. And it sucks because, yeah, it means we're trying to polish a turd. But guess what? That's the job. So, anyways.
No different with any other job, Maltz.
I know.
You're problem solving. Okay? Like, I did my trade, and I can tell you right now, I can teach you how to stick a square on a wall or on a floor, but that ain't going to teach you how to get the job done. Because you're building on somebody else's work, and your work is only as good as their work. So if you can't fix their fucking work using your work, then your work's going to be shit. Because yeah. 1 millimeter over 20 meters is a very wide gap.
Yeah, I could see that. Yeah, because that would just be a compounding problem, wouldn't it?
Well, it's same with everything. If a wall isn't square, you've got to know how to hide that. And that's what's in the skill of the trade, man, is being able to hide other people's fuck-ups. And I know what you're going to say, well, it only happens every now and then. No, it's every job is fucked up. There's nothing. Okay, how the architect draws the plan? Okay, everything looks good on paper. Doing it practically? Now, that's a fucking challenge. I'm telling you right now. You can have the prettiest paperwork in the world, but the tradesman's got to get it to look like that. And sometimes your idea in your head doesn't meet reality.
Oh, I know that. When it does meet
reality, when it does meet reality, you don't like it, and then it's my fault again. So one job.
Oh, good.
Just one, real quick. One job. I changed this kitchen splashback 9 times in 2 weeks.
Wow.
Yeah. So I do it. Fucking finish it. Bring the architect in. The architect go. And I mean, this place is $9 million in 1990s money, so figure that out.
Yeah,
and it was for a judge, and the architect come in, sign off on it. Beauty, I go do something else. The owner come in and go, no, that's not what I wanted. Rip it out, redo it, because they couldn't see it in their own fucking head. They were too arrogant to listen to someone else, because they're a judge.
Anyway. That's a classic problem with. A lot of management. They don't know what they want, so they give you a bad, incomplete picture of it. And nobody's willing to say, we don't understand you, because they don't want to look like the dumbass in the room. So they go off and build something. When they bring it back to that manager's like, no, that's not quite right. That's not really. Yeah, I played that game. That's not fun.
I mean, like in that movie we watched last week, the outfit, where the guy's like, well, you need to alter the sleeves. I'm telling you, it's the back of the jacket. Well, I want the sleeves altered. I'm paying you the money. So I alter the back of the jacket. And then when it fits perfect, they go, see, I told you I had it right.
Yeah, that was a good movie. That was a damn good movie, actually. But yeah, it's just what it is, man. It's
90% of all work is eating other people's shit. Depends on which scenario you're in, but you could actually have to eat real shit.
Gross. But it does remind me of the classic security person's problem, which is whenever code doesn't work from a programmer, well, it worked on their laptop, so it must be the security controls. Oh, you know, it's your firewall. It's got to be the damned firewall keeping my code from working. So you give them a 24-hour exemption on the firewall, and the thing still doesn't fucking work. Oh, it's not the firewall. It must be the antivirus. So they get the exemption to remove the antivirus, or they don't. They just get the admin to go do it anyways. Still doesn't fucking work. So after they've stripped out all the security controls, then they start blaming the network. Yeah. Then you get somebody who's only an amateur coder to take a look at it and say, dude, you're closing your session after every call. It's no wonder you're blowing it out. Go look at your Salesforce account. You've blown out your API calls for the week. And it's like, no, that can't be that. That's not it. Yeah, it is. It's because for every API call, you're blowing, you know, five more calls to authenticate and deauthenticate. So, yeah. But it's like, no, you don't know what you're on about. You're not a coder. You're right. I'm not. But I'm telling you, that's wrong. It's just like, but yeah, no, they, you know, it must be the network. Oh, it's not the network, man. It's your damn server is not powerful. Yeah, I love it. And of course, their management fucking keeps anyways, that's always a fun fight. Let's go through these stories. So early bit about security tech can be help desk refused and sysop. You know, in this day and age, trying to take that amount of time to train somebody up is kind of hard, though. I still might want to make them do a few months in each spot, just shadowing somebody, just so they have an option to see what's, you know, how a network works. He knew the systems all over. Oh, other thing was Snowden, and this is a classic problem at a lot of industries. SysOp makes little sense for security, sir. I think you and I might be using different definitions of those words.
Boy, you're being baited into a shit fight.
Oh.
I don't know, man. I'm not looking.
Believe me, if you are doing security research and you haven't spent time doing a bit of system administration, so you know what a system should look like, know where the logs are, know how, you know, software is deployed on that particular platform. I have had to go after junior security guys because they didn't know Windows administration and they didn't know where the logs for, you know, ISS were, because they were looking in an event viewer and couldn't find them. Believe me. No, it's not 2 years to get an understanding of it. No. It's not that I need them to have that basic, you know, okay, here's where the logs for ISS are. I need them to have a basic understanding of how a network works and what these, you know, what the requests coming into the administration team generally are. You know, what are they being asked to do? What are they having to do to make things work? I know a brilliant Linux sysop who has no spine and just gets walked all over every day by everybody. And he ends up working 12 hours a day solving everybody else's problems just because he doesn't have the backbone to say no. And I've, you know, talked to their management and I've tried to help them out. But, you know, if they're not going to stand up for themselves at the end of the day, it's on them. And I tell you, it doesn't – he's brilliant at fixing problems. and he knows these systems inside and out, and some of the stuff he has to do to make the coder's shit work is insane. I've seen this man manually patch Java deploys because they're using such an old version of Java that all of the TLS certificates are expired. Like, he's taking apart the Java JDK distribution and fixing it to run on modern systems because he's got programmers who can't code in anything but Java 6. And again, I want my security people to know that they're doing shit like that, because from the security standpoint, it's Java 6, no, just no, tell them no. And because the sysops aren't telling them no, they're making it fucking work. You know, how do you deal with a system like that, right? You have to know that it's happening, for one, because when I describe it, it's insane. It's like, why would you do that? Just use a modern version of Java. And it's because they had a couple of programmers who refused to use anything else and had their management convinced that that was the only way to do it. So, yeah, it's you need to know what's going on, and you need to spend some time, maybe not a full year, but you definitely need to spend some time in these other areas before you know, and understand how the thing operates on multiple levels before you're going to go try to secure it. If you're designing a prison and you're only looking at the front gate and you're not looking at the back, you'll never get the thing secure. So you need to have some experience around these systems. What Rat said, I've done 5 years help desk. The amount of guys studying to be coders but don't know anything about hardware, what their code actually does is machine code. Yeah, I can't tell you the number of programmers I've known who have no fucking clue about anything, but they know Java, damn it. So, or they know SQL.
Specialize and die.
And, well, I mean, I was telling you about that data scientist, quote unquote, who thinks he knows. Oh, my God. Anyways.
Yeah.
Okay. We got to go.
Let's get to the stories.
Really grinds my gears. Yeah, in the Peter Griffin voice, not the Andy Griffin voice. Anyways.
Works both for me.
Yeah.
Works for Gilbert Godfrey for me, man.
You know what really grinds my. Oh, yeah. He just died.
Yeah.
And I can't do a good Gilbert Godfrey. I can't yell enough.
Fox for that.
Yeah. Anyways, this one's from Yahoo News. Apple must pay a man more than $1,000 for not including a power adapter with his new iPhone, the judge rules. So a Brazilian judge has ordered Apple to pay 5,000 Brazilian real, or $1,081, to a man for not including a power adapter with the sale of his new iPhone. Judge Vandrelli Carres Pinheiro of a civil court in the city of Goiânia ruled the practice a tie sale, or a situation in which a company requires a customer to buy two of its products for one to work, according to court documents seen by Insider. The judges said Apple had, quote, obliged the customer to purchase a second product of its exclusive manufacturer, unquote, calling it a, quote, abusive and illegal commercial practice, unquote. In its defense, Apple said each iPhone came with a USB-C to Lightning cable, which lets the consumers charge their phone using power adapters they can buy from other companies, according to the court documents. But the judge rejected the argument, saying the cable doesn't work with wall adapters lacking a USB-C port with which the Apple charger was designed. He also noted, and that's true, there are tons of USB chargers floating around, but switching to USB-C means there's a lot fewer of them that will work. Alizar in the IRC says this is like suing a prostitute for not bringing the condoms.
I like that analogy. I'm going to steal that.
It's funny. He also noted that Apple said it stopped providing the power adapter out of concern for the environment and because of a supply shortage of the accessory. Pinheiro responded by saying Apple was still manufacturing its power adapters and selling them separately. Quote, it is not appropriate that such a measure seeks to reduce environmental impact, since in all evidence, the defendant continues to manufacture such an essential accessory, but now sells it separately, unquote, Pinheiro said. Apple first announced it would stop providing power adapters with its iPhone 12 in 2020, which the Brazilian government said it found to be abusive. In 2021, it fined Apple $2 million for the practice, saying the tech giant failed to demonstrate the, quote, environmental gain, unquote, it had advertised, according to the Brazilian outlet G1. Apple did not immediately respond for a request for comment from Insider.
It gained their ESG score. That's how it worked. What, they don't? The Brazilian government doesn't take that into account. It just, you know, ups your ESG score.
No, they're just seeing a chance. Oh, to
is that not actually doing anything for the environment apart from satisfying shareholders with a number?
I think that's part of it. I mean, honestly, these
we are going to see so much more of this. Well, I can't provide you that because of the environment.
Well, Tesla, you know, we just started doing that.
Yeah, I mean.
Oh, Rats. Rats says, what score? The ESG score. Have some fun Googling that in the United Nations documents.
Yeah, good luck, man. If you're just starting down that rabbit hole now, you may be a bit late to the show.
I'm hearing about it at work, too, working on their ESG score. It's
me and Madman have been screaming about it for 5 years now.
Yeah, social guidance or something like that. Yeah, it's you might as well call it their woke score.
Equity and inclusion.
Oh, is that what it was? Okay.
It's all about equity and inclusion.
No, it's not. It's not carbon credits, but if you have carbon credits, I think it contributes to it.
Yeah, well, they did start selling them without telling the public. And also, too, if you're curious, you might want to look into PPP, public-private partnership, which allows a company to cozy up the government pretty much, and all losses are shared with the public, all gains are kept out of the public.
I like that one. Diversion, inclusion, equity. Oh, you mean die? I like that one.
It's like buy large mansions. BLM.
Rats is a good one too. It's like why don't we just start planting large amounts of trees in BLM land? It means Bureau of Land Management, not Black Lives Matter. I don't know why they don't do that. Probably because nobody wants to pay for the damn trees. That's a classic problem with government. Everybody likes the idea. Nobody wants to fund it. Anyways, yeah, I mean, I don't know with this because I've got chargers everywhere, but I'm kind of a weird case, you know, being a technophile or whatever the term is these days. So, you know, I've got a USB charger in pretty much every room in my house, and enough chargers to probably do it twice over. So it doesn't bother me so much that the phone doesn't come with it, but your average person might only have, you know, one or two, or they might have one that's not USB-C. They might have an old USB-A charger floating around, and that's all they got. And so now they got to buy a charger when they buy their phone. And yeah, well, it's like what we said last night. Really, what they should be doing is Apple should just ask, do you want a charger with your phone? And if they don't, if somebody says, no, I'm good, then cool. And if they say, yeah, I need a charger, then grab the box with the charger in it and stack that on top of the phone. Just make it something they can get for free when they buy the phone or not. Just make it an option. Oh, well, that's why they're not planting all those trees. Most of that area of BLM is desert or mountains. I mean, that's not a lot of that's not land that would be useful for trees, dude. In the northern bits of Alaska there? Yeah, no, none of that. You're not going to get trees to grow very well there, dude.
Get oil to grow.
So, that's a good chunk of it, is, you know, trying to plant the evergreens in the desert just ain't going to work. So, anyways, yeah, they do own a lot of, the BLM does have a lot of the Western United States, and there are probably parts of it where they could absolutely go out and seed it, but yeah, a good 30 to 40% of what you've got on that map there, it's not.
You have to understand, too, trees are a commodity. If you go planting a fuck ton of trees, you've just lowered the price of timber in the futures market. So that could seriously affect the market prices. Another reason why they don't do it.
So, anyways, this next article, Suave actually gave me this one. It's just from Slashdot. Insteon looks dead. The smart home company Insteon has vanished. The entire company seems to have abruptly just shut down before the weekend, breaking users' cloud-dependent smart home setups without warning. From a report, quote, users say the service has been down for 3 days now, despite the company's status page saying all services online. Company forums are down. No one is replying to users on social media. As Internet of Things reporter Stacey Higginbotham points out, high-ranking Insteon executives, including CEO Rob Linus, have scrubbed the company from their LinkedIn accounts. In the time it took to write the article, Linus also removed his name and picture from his LinkedIn profile. It seems like most of the communications longtime Insteon customers are going to get. Insteon is, or more likely was, a smart home company that produced a variety of internet-connected lights, thermostats, plugs, sensors, and of course the Insteon Hub. At the core of the company was Insteon's proprietary networking protocol, which was a competitor to more popular licensable alternatives like Z-Wave and Zigbee. Insteon's, quote, unique and patented dual mesh technology, unquote, used both the 900 megahertz wireless protocol and power line networking, which the company said created a more reliable network than wireless alone. The Insteon Hub would bridge all your gear into the internet and enable use of the app. So that's the end of the quoted article here. But I mean, so I guess this entire company, and this is the bad thing about having all these internet connected devices, because they didn't say door locks, and I know that's one that people were starting to do. But yeah, you come home, you try to use the app to do all your lights, and just nothing works because it's all dependent on a server that this company runs, and this
And
company's just gone full, you know, just dropped off the face of the earth. You know, they've just.
I hope these people don't have analog backups, as in no light switches on the walls and stuff like that. It's just walking around the dark,
Oh,
fucking wondering, how their existence can go on without the internet, slowly
dude.
realizing that they need to kill themselves.
So a lot of these smart light switches, what they do is, yeah, they're not an analog backup. You know, you'd think they would be because they're a switch on the wall. But all that switch on the wall does is tell the little hub, "Hey, flip that light on." You have to program all of them, and so yeah, if the hub doesn't work, you know. Get the screwdriver out because you're switching back to analog switches.
Just go ahead and put that screwdriver right into the socket, end yourself. If you've got your house hooked up to the internet, as Madman says, the toaster should not be on the fucking internet. But yeah, those people have to rethink their lives.
With the fact that Insteon is like scrubbing themselves and having their people go pull it out of their LinkedIn profiles and shit like that means that not only has this company just abruptly disappeared off the map, but the people who work there are trying to hide, which means something bad has happened. And most likely, I'm expecting lawsuits.
I'm expecting some dude managed to hack into somebody's house, got in there and did something nefarious to someone, and now there's a huge fucking lawsuit. That's what
Oh,
I'm thinking.
I was thinking it was just going to be like embezzlement or something. But
I like to go to the darkest places that I can find, and that's what I'm thinking. Some sort of pet sacrifice.
God. That escalated quickly. I'm thinking,
Mittens, no.
wow. I mean, I'm thinking, fraud, insider trading, something like that. You're thinking pet sacrifice, cults.
Yeah. You live in Narnia, dude. I live in hell.
Okay, then. I don't know how to respond to that. I mean, granted, I've seen pictures of Australia, and I think it could be described as hell.
I don't know, man. Yeah, it's probably embezzlement or something like that.
Yeah, I mean, so something incredibly boring and not surprising at all, or just
Someone in their marketing department invested everything they had in NFTs.
oh God, how bad would it be if that's what it was? Vic Chaos here.
I told you I was dark, man.
I need to clip that Victor Chaos, you like where he's presenting at the Applebee's. I need to get that as a clip, and I need to use that at work.
Anyway, next story.
Oh, rats. Yeah. Apparently, rats had a friend who was running a baby cam that was hooked up the internet that if you found the IP, you could just get into it. Yeah, cam hunting used to be a great pastime.
Yeah.
You know,
Many a
I'm.
night have I whiled away looking at other people's children through nanny cams.
Yeah. Until somebody got into it and
Scaring the giraffes at the Boston Zoo.
started screaming at the kids through it and.
Yeah, that ruined it for everyone.
Yeah, really.
That was funny, though.
Maybe I'm
I wonder
mixing
if
it up,
it's.
but I know they were like yelling racial slurs and stuff at him, but I'm trying to remember because I could swear somebody was like reading a manifesto over it to their kids.
There was a dude doing some really creepy shit. And then the story went to the mainstream, and then you had all these hysterical fucking women, clutching at pearls. My child's being molested by hackers through the camera.
Yeah. Apparently, they're talking about Ring in the IRC now that people don't know that there's a subscription attached to it, and they're talking people out of it. So,
Yeah, you can put.
yeah.
We can post this in for the show. Well, it's for those who are interested in cameras that are unsecured. The database of them.
Oh,
I remember
okay.
when you used to have to hunt around and find them, but
Yeah. Yeah. Now it's
someone's put
here
a
you go.
whole site together.
Actually,
I
well,
hope that helps.
yep. Actually, makes me reminds me of it was one of my earliest finds when I was working at the school. Was can't they had one of these unsecured cameras in the bursar's office pointed at the desk. It was like, okay, the likelihood that I could actually zoom in enough to read bank numbers off of the ledger is low, but it's not impossible. And, once they found that one, they freaked out. So that was a fun one. But, anyways, let's do this next one here. This is from the Register. It's kind of no duh, but it's worth mentioning. Let's see. Paste. Paste. There it goes. Semiconductor average lead time breaks half-year barrier. So this.
Good.
This is from the Register. We all know the global chip shortage has been bad, and there's a new data point. Semiconductor lead times grew to an average of 26 and a half weeks in March. For those who have, in this era of perpetual pandemic, understandably forgotten how calendars work, that means it now takes chip makers more than half a year on average to deliver a variety of semiconductors, from memory and power management chips to microcontrollers to clock and timing electronics to analog and discrete components. This figure came from a privately distributed April 5th report on semiconductor lead times from financial firm analyst firm Sukhana, which compiles data from the industry's largest distributors. It said that after 2 months of chip supplies improving, the average lead time increased by 2 days last month. Rather than talking about CPUs and GPUs that soak up headlines about shortages, their report zeroed in on small but critical components that go in everything from PCs to servers to cars to a wide variety of electronics, and even that is underselling their pervasiveness. Sukhana said that there's a variety of events that impacted the supply chain in the first quarter, including Russia's invasion of Ukraine, earthquake in Japan, two pandemic lockdowns in China. The firm suspects the effects of these may linger for the rest of the year. As the report lays out, the lead times for these semiconductors have worsened since the fall of 2020, when it took an average of 13.9 weeks to get parts delivered. They said March's 2022 26.6-week lead time, which grew by 2 days over the previous month, represents the highest overall average wait time of semiconductor components it's seen since it started collecting data in 2017. They keep going on here about stuff being on back order and backlog. So, what you this is a compounding effect, which is why I want to talk about it. The fact that it means to get a conductor component, a 6 month, you're half a year lead time, 6 months. So, if I'm trying to build a product, and I have to order semiconductors with a 6-month lead time, I have to guess how many of them I'm going to make in the 6-month lead time, or how many of them I'm going to make 6 months from now, and try to guess that number. Because I may not be able to order more. I guess it would depend on the company, but even if I wait a month and order more, it's still 6 months on the more. So, you know, if your pipeline isn't full of parts, if you're stuck waiting on that, those are very hard decisions to make at a business, especially if you're dealing with other competitors and you don't know how many parts you're going to have to order. So the temptation is going to be to overorder. The temptation is going to be, you know, well, the estimate says that we might be making 1,000 of the widget. I better order enough to make 1,100 in case we have overproduction. You'd rather have some extra than not enough, right?
Yeah.
Well, you're not going to be the only one thinking that. This is game theory, right? Everyone who orders semiconductors is going to be thinking that. So they're all going to overorder. They're all going to overorder, leading to longer delay times.
Means to cheaper products down the track, though.
It will. Eventually, they'll everybody have too much, and you'll have an extra crap floating around, depending on what it is. Because they're talking about microcontrollers and semiconductors, which, you know, these are going to be like your logic chips and shit like that. LEDs. Charging circuits for like battery management and shit like that. That's in everything. But you think about it, you know, as these lead times get ahead and ahead and ahead, you know, if you are trying to make a GPU or CPU, and you have to guesstimate what you're going to make that far out. I mean, Ryzen and Intel have been trading blows, releasing new chips like every 6 months as it is. So, I mean, you know, you're just putting a longer delay on getting new stuff. And there's a lot of this, but this is just not great, because it means that if you're going for the older stuff, it's probably going to be cheaper. But if you're still trying to get the high-end stuff, it's still going to be a pain in the butt. So, I guess the short version is, don't expect the semiconductor shortage to get better anytime soon. It's been literally gradually getting worse. So, good times. Next story, this one's also from Suave. This is more just comedy than anything. And I need to note these in the show notes, the two Suave sent me, so that he can get his credit. Ukrainian millionaire says he asked the military to bomb his mansion because he saw Russian troops occupying it. The 6X AMD cards. I have not been keeping up on GPUs lately, dude. I really haven't. I'm sorry. They've been just such a rich man's game. I've been buying other things. weird flex, but okay. Okay, no, it wasn't a weird flex. So, a Ukrainian millionaire says he asked his country's military to bomb his mansion after he saw it had been seized and occupied by Russian troops. Andrew Stanovisker? I'm not saying it right. Whatever. The CEO of the Ukrainian IT company Transinvest Service told ITV's Good Morning Britain that he saw Russian forces, including a Tornado rocket launcher, move onto his property near Irpin on March the 5th via a security camera. Irpin is a town outside the Ukraine capital of Kiev. Quote, they destroyed most of the cameras in the house, but there was one small amateur webcam, he said. Stranovisker, who left Ukraine for Poland after Russia invaded... So you ran. I guess you had the resources to do it. So I'm just gonna leave it there. Who left?
Also, that motherfucker shouldn't be ever let back into the Ukraine.
I mean,
the same with these Syrians and shit that ran, man. If I was a Syrian and still there, and you came back, thanks very much for defending the country. And fuck you, man. I'd kill him.
Well, I don't know about killing him, but I mean, it's like, you know, if you have a lot of resources and you're in a position of authority like that, I understand wanting to get out in the middle of an invasion. I do. But you've got your president on camera in the trenches there, dude. That's not a great look.
that was all bullshit, dude. I was those trench photos, they were from the year before. That was all psyop. I see the photos of the photos being taken.
I know.
Ridiculous. But yeah, I'm calling bullshit on this story. But anyway, keep going.
Anyways, okay, so quote, there were 12 military vehicles on my territory, which included rocket launchers, grenades, and a tornado, Stenvester said. They were basically starting to shoot at Kiev from my house. Stenvester told GMB he felt disgusted seeing the troops in his home and called the Ukrainian armed forces to give them the blessing to raise his home. Thankfully, they were destroyed by the Ukrainian military, he said. It's like, hey guys, I'm looking at my cameras from Poland. Russian troops are there. Go bomb my address.
Well, one, it was a war zone. I doubt the fucking power was on.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a few little holes I could try and ram through this one, but I'll let them have their propaganda piece.
Yeah, I think that's just bad translation. Let's see. Ukraine Defense Ministry did not immediately respond to insiders' requests for comments. Stenvester posted images of what he said was the destroyed Russian artillery to his Facebook page earlier this month. Speaking with GMB, Stenvester said he didn't care about the house, despite it being brand new and investing a lot of time into it. Quote, it was kind of an obvious decision for me. There's not a lot you can do to help the military, and that was one of the opportunities I had, he told GMB. Quote, I want to do everything to help Ukraine win, unquote. But you fled to Poland. I'm just I can't help that.
Oh,
okay,
I see it, man. I see it.
I mean, and maybe that's childish of me to stick on that, but anyways, Russian forces have in recent weeks. Okay, blah 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 blah. So I'm not that worried about the rest of it, but I just, I mean, it's a funny story. It's like he looked on his home security and saw the Russians in his house and called the military. But
I mean, it gives me an idea for a prank phone call.
oh, that'd be a bad prank phone call to pull in a war zone. Make sure nobody's actually there if you're gonna
Who's
do that.
sitting there going, yes, okay, so that is your house. You are who you say you are. Okay, and how much crypto do I give you? Sorry, what sort of call is this? Like, how fucking retarded do you think I am? I'm not bombing your fucking coordinates. You're not part of the military. Who fucking, well, yeah, I'll just call our artillery to fucking level my house.
Hey, General, I got some intel for you.
Like, granted, the dude has a lot of money, may know someone in the government, but I'd love to hear the phone call.
Yeah.
How do you even start that? What even is the government's position on taking
swatting war zone style?
Coordinates
Thank you,
from
rats. That's
fucking
awesome.
people in a different country?
It's got to be like a influence thing. Like, okay, if this guy's part of a big IT company, he had to know people in the government to know who to call.
Yeah, I still I'm gonna just leave that right where it is.
What happened with DuckDuckGo? Oh, well, that's the next story here. So, basically, oh, you're talking about the whole their links disappearing thing? DuckDuckGo is getting a lot of their stuff from Bing, and that's why they seemed like they were censoring things. Bing was doing it, and so it was fucking up their results, and they had to go back manually fix it. Russia in search engine disinformation. Oh no, they did do that. They're downranking less reliable sources, trying to not, because they don't want to. Yeah, that's been a thing for a couple of months now that they said they were going to do that. Are you sent me something on that the other day, so it must be resurfacing, because that's
Bing.
a little bit old.
Yeah, DuckDuckGo, that the story is still floating around because people are pissed off. That's why you're still seeing it every now and then. But you were the chosen one, you know? You were meant to be it.
Always fun to get a prequels reference in there. Let's see. So this is from the Register. Updated. The Brave browser, Brave, the browser maker, and DuckDuckGo, the web search engine, have both taken aim at AMP, Google's controversial web publishing framework. Brave on Tuesday introduced a feature called DAMP, which lets those using the Brave browser avoid Google-hosted AMP pages and go straight to publisher content on standard web pages. DAMP will fetch web pages that link to AMP pages so that their links point to the publisher versus versions of those pages. Brave's browser, which uses a modified version of Google's Chromium, will watch for when AMP pages are being loaded and stop them before they can render. Doing so prevents the AMP scripts and images from being fetched and executing and executed while also reducing the ad giant's ability to see web traffic and understand where it's going. And in Brave 1.4, current version is 1.37, the plan is to extend Brave's debouncing capability to detect when AMP URLs are about to be visited and instead send users to the standard version of the page. DuckDuckGo on Tuesday said its AMP and extension or its app and extensions now protect against Google AMP. Those loading or sharing a Google AMP page via DuckDuckGo's iOS, Android, or Mac apps or using its Chrome or Firefox extensions will see the publisher's regular web page instead of the Google AMP version. AMP, as Google describes it, is a way to create web pages using a subset of HTML, JavaScript, and CSS, along with unique markup and a CDN for caching. Its goal, Google claims, is better user experience because AMP pages load faster than web pages built with standard technology. Google's competitors and critics see things differently. The years following the announcement of AMP in 2015, the technology was derided for sending web traffic to a cache on Google servers instead of to the website implementing AMP pages and for disempowering publishers. That's always been the problem with AMP is that, so AMP has a CDN built in that it basically forces you to use Google servers to load pages. And, you know, it also obfuscates links so that if you try to, you know, use a browser that doesn't support AMP and you load a page that uses AMP, all of your links go back to the AMP's version, not to... And so, of course, the argument there is, oh, so Google sees every link you click going through this thing. So, but anyways, but yeah, so both Brave and DuckDuckGo are trying to flat out block it and find ways around it, which is cool. Yeah, I see you guys talking about the downranking and the fact that that sets precedent. I could argue, did we talk about that a couple of, you know, back when it happened?
Yeah, when it happened, we did.
Okay. I'm pretty sure our point was, yeah, this is probably not a great practice. I mean, it's just, but who else have you got at this point? Yeah, Cirex. You could use Cirex, but that's... The thing is, Cirex is not a search engine in its own right. It's a meta search. So it's like, it searches, you know, Google, Bing, DuckDuckGo, and like five other search engines that I can't remember all at the same time. So you get a better, broader set of results. To route more traffic through the server. It's partly, it's also partially, you have a lot of CDNs using it because it does save money. Brave search for now until I give up hard code IPs on, oh, okay. Yeah, yeah. But, you know, they also, Google was just, has been pushing this massively, especially with their own cloud hosting and things like that. So, it's not so much that they're forcing it through the browser, it's that they're forcing it through AMP, and the browser supports it. Yeah, so it's pre-caching on Google servers. That's a good way to put it, Alhazard. So, anyways, though, I like seeing people actively working to block it. I think you should have a choice in what protocols you use. And if that means your pages take an extra half second to load, so what? It's your choice, man.
No one needs porn that quickly.
Nobody else remember the good old days where you could actually watch a JPEG load over the modem?
Go outside and play, come back in, still not there. Oh my God, it's got a dick.
Yeah, there it is. Okay, let's do this. Two things for you tonight in Digital Dojo. The first is, I may have linked the old version of this, but it's been recently updated and they moved it. It's called The Hitchhiker's Guide to Online Anonymity. This, I have not reviewed the entire thing, but it's actually got a pretty good write-up on a lot of the basics of, you know, different ways of setting up privacy-respecting systems, things like Tor, Cubes, Hoonix, so if you're wanting to do that, creating anonymous online identities, it's got a lot of information. It's just a big block of how to do a bunch of random crap on the internet to try to keep yourself secure. I don't think you need to live by this thing, but if you're going to be doing something that you want to protect your identity, and I will leave what that is up to the imagination of the listener, there's information in here on how to do it. So it's a nice set of links. It's a nice set of write-ups. It's a good place to start, especially if you know nothing about Alhazard, Tuck to Torrent, Freak, DuckDuckGo, removes pirate sites. Okay, yeah, that's what I was talking about. That's because they get most of their search results from Bing. They've got an agreement with Bing. And because Bing filtered all that stuff out, it dropped out of DuckDuckGo, and then they had to manually put a lot of those links back in because they screwed up. And so they were out for a bit. But, rats. I'm not reading that one out, but that's funny. It's a decent set of privacy guides. It's a good place to get started. But Pornhub released stats that gay porn was the most popular in Evangelion South.
Is that Herat's posting?
Yes.
I have one question for Herat's. Do you ever donate large amounts of cash in super chats, Herat's? Just a question. I don't want money. I just want to know if you've ever donated large amounts of cash in super chats. Just a yes or a no, because if yeah, I don't.
He says he has once.
Was it within the last week?
Don't feel bad, Rats. He's done this to me before too. Comes in TeamSpeak and says, "I fucking got you." And he had,
and so. I fucking did get you, man. Did, it was just your voice on an obscure fucking conference.
Anyways, he says not at all.
Okay, then. Thank you.
And the last thing I have for you tonight in Digital Dojo is pretty cool. I'm not going to read out what he posted to on air. I'll tell you when we're done broadcasting.
Right. Yeah, I don't want to out him on air.
This one's pretty cool if you have a 3D printer. This is from, of course, Prusa Printers. And they're using it to pimp their own model archive. But they... it's an interesting concept. So 3D printer PLA is actually fairly malleable at relatively low temperatures. You know, anything above, 60, 70 degrees C, and you can bend it fairly easily. And these are 3D printable hand splints. And so... but they're not in shape. They're flat. They're flattened out. So the models just look like oddly shaped sheets with a hexagon pattern and then some things on the sides for like attaching straps. And then the video goes into how to use these things. So the idea is, I would think, you would want to 3D print a set of these ahead of time and just have them stashed away with your first aid kit. And so then somebody injures their hand or you need to put a splint on, like finger or something, you can heat up the 3D printed splint with hot water, the heat bed of your 3D printer, an air gun, or a hot air gun, or even a hair dryer. And then form it around the injured hand or finger as a way of making a plastic splint so that when it cools, it's formed correctly to whatever, wherever you were trying to splint it. And then they've got some guides in there about putting a wrap or a gauze under it so that you're not putting the plastic directly on the skin, forming the splint, and then wrapping that in, you know, something to secure it, whether that's a bandage or straps or whatever. So it's a cool idea. If you've got a 3D printer, it's probably a good idea to run some of this stuff off and just have it handy. You know, finger splints are handy for more than just having busted a finger, you know, having broken a bone. So, looks like moleskin tape in the thumbnail. Yeah, I was blanking on what that stuff is. Yeah, it's medical tape. So, moleskin tape, sure. But they were also using some Velcro straps because some of the models look like they've got spots in them for doing straps. But I just a neat idea. Just a good use of 3D printing. Just have some of this stuff handy. So, anyways, that's all I got for tonight. What are we at? We're right at the hour. So, excellent. Of course, listen to the stream while I was working up. Here decking every Thursday. Galaxy 15 radio site, the subreddit, in the IRC tonight. We had Al Hazard, Cyberlord, Psychros, Haratz, and myself. Are you? Any closing thoughts?
No, I don't even have a movie for you this week. The only thing, Better Call Saul's back on, if you're a fan of that.
Okay.
Hopefully if it's a good season.
So I think with that, I'm just going to play some sound effects and close this out.
We're sorry. Your call cannot be completed as dialed.
And now I don't suffer, because I got a bottle of 60 warm hugs from God.
Shut up, Wesley.